Good for sound. Hello and welcome to the Comedy Club Podcast. I am your host, Dustin Deuce Kaufman. Please follow us here. Sit, subscribe, share with your friends. Follow us across the board at the Comedy Club. KC, I am here today with 2.5 very funny people.
Oh, all right. Wait,
we don't know who's
just... Wow.
We don't know.
What are you talking about?
I think we know. I'm 1.5.
You told me to pretend Joe's not here. Joe O'Brien, Rob Mayer, and David Koechner.
What's up, house. Everybody?
Man, thank you for the weekend. Thank you for being at the club. Weekend. Thank you for coming up here.
Great times this weekend. Great
thank you club. For the veggie fruit and cheese plate every night.
Very sweet.
The classy
very
nice. Move.
You guys go through it too, man.
Yeah, but it's
we
just
do.
Way more than other people.
Some people don't really get it. I mean, some people are so appreciative, but I mean, as far as like emptying it every night, not usually.
Great podcast. Yeah. We're talking about the fruit and veggie tray.
It's not the first time it's come up. Greg Warren just like obsessed about the broccoli.
He's known for his grapes and broccoli.
So I know Rob, and then you, last minute you're like, hey, can we get a hotel for Joe here?
Yeah.
What's the relationship with Joe O'Brien?
Joe O'Brien, well, I'm rewriting a lot of my show, and Joe and I have worked together 3 years ago.
During the pandemic we started.
Yeah. Right, we started.
Actually, before the pandemic,
right.
we pitched some things.
And Joe's done all kinds of comedy. He's done improv, stand-up, sketch, produced television, written for television. So we have a common background, I think. And so I felt like, and plus I think Joe's hilarious and a great writer.
And
so
he's easy hang.
He's like, come help me rewrite. Right. And
yes, my act.
Punch
so,
it up.
So I, when the 2.5, I might be switching that.
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah.
a little
Joe's
bit.
Joe's the funny.
Yeah.
Joe's the funny.
I think by the end, the audience can give their shares and they can dole them out. We'll let them decide.
You know what happens, though? When you're doing your own act, you can't see it any longer. Can't hear it any longer and look for something new. A lot of times I'll do a lot of my stuff on my feet because I'm an improviser, so I'll find a lot of different stuff in the moment, and if I don't listen to it or right away, I'll forget about it. And so to have someone else who goes, that here's you know, it's really a lot of it's about tightening it up.
Yeah.
And so a writer's better at that, you know, a more
editing.
Disciplined writer.
Actually, a lot of it too is also like he'll say something funny on stage that's really funny, just basically writing that down and remembering. Okay, remember to say that next time because it was funny.
I actually really understand what you're talking about as far as it's hard to see yourself on stage
right.
and stuff like that. Like, I know that, you know, I used to write with a couple different buddies, and I always felt like I would write better stuff for them than I could for myself.
Mm. Makes sense.
Maybe even as a younger, in my early 20s, maybe you don't even really know yourself even, mm-hmm. but then they could be like, hey, you should try this, because they see you.
Right.
They know you.
It's hard to look and hear yourself and go, what do I need to change? And because you're not taking in the way the audience is taking it. So that's, I think, the difference. The thing I needed the most.
And you can slip into some crutches or things that you're not quite telling the joke with the same enthusiasm, or you're speeding through it because we might have told them often, many weeks in a row.
And sometimes it's just the reinforcement. Oh, no, that part's good, because you might be tired of a piece.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, no, use that, shorten it here. Then it breathes new life into it.
Yeah.
So you've known Joe a long time.
I guess like 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I would say it was. Yeah. I remember it was pre-pandemic, and then we did a bunch of stuff during the pandemic.
Okay. And then Rob, you've been opening up for David for 8 years now.
Yeah, that's what we're going. I think we.
That's
met,
just the introduction.
We probably met longer. It'd probably been 10 years by now, to be
Is
honest.
That right?
So yeah.
Yeah.
We met just by chance. I work with him in Arlington, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., this club that we still do pretty on the regular basis.
What would happen, and this is no judgment on anybody out there, but my act is heavy kids because I have 5 kids. That's going to figure into
especially
it.
Back then.
Yeah, especially back then. Because mm-hmm. I started doing stand-up when I had my 5th kid. I've always done live. I've always done sketch and improv. I've done tons of different live shows. So live is no issue for me. So I just switching over to stand-up was like, going from a 2-person scene to a 300-person scene, because your relationships is still somewhere. But anyway, invariably when I'd go out, and if I didn't bring my own people, then you'd get an opener, and you'd get a middle person, and the opener tends to be very green, and so in my opinion, that often is a detriment to the show. Regardless, if they're depends on room to room, right? They can be very competent. All they need to do is 8 minutes or 6 minutes and start the show.
Very hit or miss, though.
Very hit or miss, mm-hmm. yes. Then usually the middle guy If it's regional, there's some guy that's in his 30s or 40s and he's doing kid material and I don't know him, so I'd have to say, hey, you can't do kid material because I'm doing kid material. So now what the fuck are they going to do?
Right.
Because that's all they have, perhaps. So every week I'd be confronted with this. And to be honest, the other part was the opener and the middle person would interview me all weekend.
So
accidentally, like, so tell me what so-and-so's like. What'd you do there? Like, I just, you know. And then Rob and I work together. His act is completely different than mine.
I have no kids. I've never had sex. So
now you just have to tell him not to talk about your kids.
Yes.
Now I force him to listen to my problems with my kids.
And I never cared about his career, so I didn't interview him at all. I had no interest. Yes.
You're not a dad. Help me figure out what to do with my kids. Rob and I hit it off right away.
That was a natural pairing,
So I called him and said, hey, would you want to... your first one was...
Well, we did the same club a year later, and then we did up the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, casino.
We're close to you. Why don't you come up and be
drivable? Yeah.
There?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, "Oh, shoot, it worked so well. Like, please just come tour with me. Makes it easy because we do an hour and a half, and it's a great hour and a half. People don't expect your opener to be that great, and Rob's great.
Thank you. We try to give them. I mean, you pay for 90 minutes, so you should get 90 minutes of laughter. Right. That's the whole idea.
I had a conversation about that semi-recently. I will say, like, most people are bringing a pretty decent opener with them.
Oh, most people bring someone?
But people who bring an opener bring a pretty deep. But occasionally, you do get that person who's just there to hit play, record on the camera, or they're there to, you know, like
find drugs,
carry the bag, like book the hotel, and it's like, man, and the comedy is
true comic,
or they just got a comic to fill in, and like they're easy to manage or something like that. But like, Rob, you're very funny.
And well, thank you, Dustin.
Yeah, it's always nice to have the show top to bottom.
Yep.
And as far as host, when I first opened the club, I was very old school. I'm like, dude, you got a 15 minutes if you want to MC. And then, like, the more you breed young comedians, the more you're like, well, do you have five?
We can start with you. They should have 15. They should. And do your best five.
Can you do an intro?
Yeah. I mean, as far as that goes, I get the being green and stuff like that.
Right.
I love watching that, though. Like,
well, I love watching it. Well, I don't love watching
it. Your act.
Do it in an open mic, but don't, you can't put that, if people are paying.
People, everybody has to have their first week of somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
In Canada, they have the MC is. But generally one of the better comics.
There's probably,
the feature's the weaker.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Because they want to put someone, you know, more experience off the top.
Canada does that.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
I absolutely understand.
It's harder to be first. But the crowd's not as warmed up.
How long do their features do?
I can't remember exactly, but I think it's probably like a 15, maybe does five more of the MC and then brings up the headline.
It is an easier.
The time is end up being the same. Because
you can just come out and be funny, but I think we have found that we teach them to be a good MC, and then they're a great feature when they get there.
Yeah.
Because we follow, you know, in that sense, as far as that goes. But I love watching people, like, the progress from, like, Thursday to Sunday or, like, Saturday, like, every show grow and learn a little bit more. And, the first night can definitely always be green, but by the end of the week, it's like, hey, you might be able to do this one day.
Well, it's in your best interest to cultivate a local scene, you know.
I think we've done.
How many nights you do open mic?
One.
Okay, and that was it Thursday?
Thursday night, 30. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. We get great crowds.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Oh, really? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And do you always do a Thursday night regular show?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
A lot of times it's local. Uh-huh. During chief season, we alternate. Like,
It's harder to get people in, or?
Yeah, especially with primetime games and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's tough.
We have the longer we're open.
Oh, Thursday, that's right. Thursday. I forgot. Thursday night football, right.
Right. Well, that's so tough. Like our head, but most of the games are Sundays.
I know, but if you've got Chiefs on Thursday night, it's got to be a ghost town.
No, you're done.
Right? It's a ghost town.
Yeah. So when Chiefs are not in season, we move our headliners to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we'll do local shows Thursday.
So you'd rather do a Sunday night headliner than a Thursday night headliner?
Yes.
Why is it? It works better?
For us, it works better.
Really?
Yeah. Especially for your, like, just run-of-the-mill, and I don't mean that to be regular headliner.
Maybe the moderately successful.
Right. The person who's probably going to sell as many tickets as we do.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Right. I mean, but aren't most Chiefs games going to be the later window? So
the Sundays.
Yeah, but they're going to be like 3 o'clock.
So during Chiefs season, we move our headliners to Thursday, Friday,
Saturday. Oh, that guy. Gotcha.
Yeah, because Sunday, yes. So they keep putting the Chiefs at the late game on Sunday because it's the ratings boost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have noticed the longer we're open, the more we can compete with that a little bit. You know, we've had playoff games on Saturdays where we still have 150 people.
Yeah, because not everyone is a huge football fan.
But Sundays are, you know, they're harder to compete with. We might eventually try to add, but you do. Maybe we'll try to do local shows around like noon games or something. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like having.
Now we've run into that because we've done a lot of Saturday matinees, and if we're in some college football area, you know, brutal.
Oftentimes we're
running up against
the office trivia on Saturday afternoons.
The matinee,
yes, which it worked a little bit, but then Rob and I are like, this should be fall, and we realize, oh right, parents have kids' games on Saturday afternoons; they can't come. So we're trying to move the trivia. Thank you for allowing that.
That was great for a Thursday.
Yes, it was great.
We sold it out.
It was so much food. Yeah. I knew they were. Because more than a regular show even, because they're just sitting there talking, eating, drinking, playing. So, like, it was just constant.
Your food's great, by the way. And I'm not just saying that. I wouldn't bring it up if it's.
I thought it was awesome. Yeah.
Food is great. It stands out.
It really does. Comedy, really, really good food.
Pick it up, comedy industry.
There you go.
Stop serving frozen chicken tenders to headliners.
No, you don't want that. You want that to be good for you. You want them. It's your club.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Keep being you guys.
I'm surprised there's not some poll like best comedy club's best food in the country. That'd be tough.
Do you want to start
nice
doing
kitchen?
That? We can start doing our own reviews.
Let's do it right now.
Yours is top 10, I would say.
Thanks.
I'm trying to think of. I know in Phoenix we've ate pretty well.
Phoenix, they have a good kitchen.
Yeah. That's also connected to a real venue that has a real restaurant.
But your food,
for a standalone comedy club, it's pretty.
Really good. Yeah. I don't like doing. I think the only thing that's like frozen to fryer would be like a cheese curd. And fries, but we're very specific about our fries. Everything else,
your fries are
made
great.
It shows, dude. Yeah. It's really good.
Like we care.
Yeah,
you know,
it makes a difference.
Have specials every once in a while. We're actually going to do some food specials for Akash Singh coming up here. For Akash. Akash Singh.
Akash.
You're going to have a very like.
What's that? What am I missing?
He's a comic, Akash Singh.
Oh, Akash. Yeah,
gotcha. AKASH.
And you're doing what? Indian food that week?
We're probably going to do. Yeah, we're going to bring in some falafel and gyros.
Well, you're pretty close. You've got that chicken gyro or chicken pita, which is
so we're happy there. And like my GM used to run like an Indian restaurant. So I think we can actually deliver it pretty good because we can tell.
Oh, does he have a heavy Indian crowd?
Heavy. And we can look at Will Call.
Service that, right.
And so they're not going to drink a lot. They're going to eat a lot. And so we're just going to try to appease. To that and say, hey, let's give them the best experience that they
you're gonna
can.
You're going to push some hummus that week.
Oh, we're going to sell some hummus.
All right.
So when did you get into stand-up?
14 years ago.
Okay.
My fifth kid, I decided, you know what? I can never not have a job. So I'm going to start doing stand-up.
So your youngest is 14.
Yeah.
And which is 3 years older than my oldest.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
How do you do it? I don't know how I do it.
You do it.
You just do
you
it.
You don't think about it. You do it, right?
I nap a lot. I'm a napper. Yeah,
dude, I love naps. I can bang down 20 minutes and be a new man. Yeah.
You've napped in the during my set a lot. That's not a reflection of my comedy.
No, it's not.
So is the crowd.
It has happened one time that I missed.
You did,
In Louisville?
It all runs together, but I do remember you've missed. Yeah,
I was upstairs. So it was and I just didn't know I was going to fall asleep. Right. I just fell asleep on the couch.
Yeah,
and it was summertime.
Yeah,
and so it was warm out.
The tracks.
And so I know you'd introduce me and I'd go, where is he?
Yeah. And then I'm like, all right, I guess we're just going to keep telling more jokes. Yeah. It's a great way to start your set, honestly.
What made you decide to jump into the stand-up game?
Because I knew I could never not have a job.
Oh.
So job security, I guess, would be a shorter way of saying it.
Income.
Joe should punch all these.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe should punch up all of these. When we do this again, this podcast, next week, we're going to have Joe punch up
the podcast. Mark, we're going to send Joe's notes with the editing.
True. When I had my fifth kid, I thought I can't ever be out of a job. And with, you're an independent contractor when you're a stand-up. So that's it. And thank God. After I turned 60, my career used to always just sail. I'd have 4 movies booked every year, and I'd always be on 2 sitcoms. Well, the whole industry's changed now. No one's working. So thank God that I did this. And after coming out of the pandemic, I had turned 60, and there was less production anyway.
Right.
And thank God I had this, because you could just go do your job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
this industry has changed. I bet you've seen that, especially for like,
I really believe that acting's done in 3 years, maybe less.
For you?
Everybody. Acting. No, not live. Film and TV.
So
I know you have an argument to that.
I think like extras and background and all that stuff. Yes.
No, guys.
And maybe some voiceover stuff. But like people, like we're talking about that at the restaurant the other week, about just ordering. People do want a connection.
I understand.
And I think
that
they're going to purposely seek it out.
But you won't know the difference between an AI person on the screen and a human.
You don't know the difference on social media anymore.
But if it's a movie star, you want to see Tom Cruise.
They're going to put dead movie stars in movies. They're already doing it.
I don't know.
There's not going to be, even if there's work for the bigger people, for the smaller projects that you don't care who's in it. I think AI is completely going to take that over. So, our actor's going to live.
Well, I don't care if they ruin Lifetime movies, okay?
Here's the thing. People want to look at something pretty. If all of your actors and actresses can be pretty, that's what they're going to watch.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're real or not. If they're just appealing to the eye, they're going to want to watch that.
I'm glad comedy isn't like that, because comedy doesn't care.
Then you would make it just a little bit off on purpose, but it's still going to be an AI comic. I really believe. Because if you put, say, me and Steve Carell together, and you put us together physically, honestly, or just shape us whatever you want to, both of whatever we do well together, that's going to make
But legally, you can't.
They can't. They won't. I wouldn't know.
They could mesh the faces, mesh the voices.
Yes. And let's say they can take my timing, which I think is something I probably do well.
Yes.
My timing with someone who doesn't have timing, who's pretty, and put that together. I won't know. I could say that I think that's me, but I won't know. Or they just use the AI algorithm will be able to capture that timing with that other person's pretty and put it together.
You think in 3 years?
Oh, less.
Joe, what do you think?
If you look at the Google VR, whatever that's called, like, it's amazing how real it looks.
Yeah.
The sound is a little bit tinny, but like, that's the stuff that anybody can do on their computer. You know, like right now, I guess Netflix just had the first AI scene in a movie where there was an epic crash scene in it that they used AI. Yeah, I think acting, like,
yeah, more than CGI, just straight up AI.
Yes, yeah. It looks way better than CGI.
Every week it's getting better.
Yeah.
I really believe, sadly, look, I don't want it to end. Obviously, I don't want it to end. I don't see any path forward. Joe, do you?
No, I think
Joe's a TV writer.
Yeah. Sierra, I'm going to replace you with AI soon.
Well, you will.
She's irreplaceable.
We all are. Look, 40% of the jobs in this country are transactional. And those jobs will be gone within 5 years.
We have joked about having a comic versus AI show here.
That'll take a lot longer. It'll happen eventually. There'll be a comic robot
that's going to kill it. Because you can have AI write.
It's not a person. I don't know if you'll go see it.
Have you tested? Right. Like, try to have ChatGPT write jokes? They're terrible.
I don't use
ChatGPT.
This. I have, and it's gotten from when I first started experimenting with that for a show I worked on. Just we would mess around with it out of curiosity, and it was awful. Like, it would be horrible. But now.
Oh, no.
It's learning.
It's some tweaking, but it's not like it's not so far out of the realm of like.
Plus, if you input it all, like if we put my show in, and we haven't done that yet. If we put my show in so it understands how I construct my jokes and the themes and what the rhythms of all of it, that'd be interesting.
I put it in I'll get a transcription of a set and I'll put it into AI just to. Break down the categories. Like, you know, can you make this so these are the jokes about this?
You do that.
Yeah, just to like.
For organization.
Wow.
But when I'm done with it, it'll ask me, I'll be like, do you want me to punch this up? literally. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Because it seems like it really needs it.
Please, because I can't figure this out.
I've not said okay, but it does make an offer.
That's coming. What if there's a new comic? Why wouldn't he use that? Put in Rodney Dangerfield and Richard Pryor's best stuff, which is all of it, and then just come out with a whole new thing that people are like, wow, how are you doing that? Now that's more likely that a new comic is going to not have any of his own stuff.
Right.
Why not have that person? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. That's exactly what will happen.
I mean, I'm sure I'm sure you could put in Rodney Dangerfield right now and just like give me 20.
Me as Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, yeah.
And rather than I get no respect, like, man, life's hard or... Yeah.
Yeah.
But is the guy that's creating that or girl is like they're making beats for music? Are they going to now become famous because they've created this Pryor Dangerfield mashup?
Will they announce that they used Pryor Dangerfield? They can't because that should be copyrighted material.
Well, they wouldn't specifically say that. But they would say,
I think it's highly likely that what will happen with AI is people are going to put their own selves into movies, and those are going to be some hits. There's going to be some hit from some kid from Nebraska that no one's ever. He's never been to Hollywood.
Right.
He's never been on stage, and he's a movie star. He or she.
Yeah. I mean, right now, they say with I think it's called Google VO, like in 12 months, you know, because it's like 7 second. You know, it only makes 7 second clips. It would take you like 12 months and probably cost you like $2,000 to do an entire movie.
That's this week that it's doing 7 second
clips. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It might be 10 second clips. And by the end of the month, it might be 20 second. Who knows? What doesn't matter? Yeah. Your points, yeah.
Well, Vine was 6 second clips, 10, 15 years ago? And now we got 3 minute reels and you can put over whatever you want out there.
Yeah. Humans will go the way of Vine.
It is interesting that you talk about that shift in the industry and like having with the stand up as well.
Live's going to last a lot longer, but I just realized it's.
But even the live aspect is changing. Like you are very unique, and you know, I think the fact that you are and have been doing stand up for the time that you have, and you bring a really good show, is what helps you continue to bring people out. Because I have found the general viewer these days don't care as much about the credit as they do the comic.
Oh yeah, I would hope so.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because there's a real resistance, especially from the comedy community, if you're not a real comic.
But the comedy community. The comics aren't the ones buying
TikTok like people, YouTuber.
Mm-hmm. The expectation is he's not going to go do stand-up. Yeah. He's just going to go tell stories about his career or you know just do lines from movies. Now, I only do lines from movies because I know that's what got them in the room. If I don't
they
do
wanna,
lines
they
from
hear
movies,
it.
They're going to be mad. And I only do them sparingly halfway through the show.
And in fairness, you also sell a couple stickers of the lines you do, and that helps push those too.
So, sure.
Yeah.
I don't think of it that way, but yes, I mean that's. But they want. If I don't do that, they're going to be very disappointed, right? Yeah. In fact, they're like, "Why didn't you do this one?" And they're like, I'm very blessed to have a large.
You could do 20 minutes of them.
I could do 20 minutes of just lines, but then you're not going. I've got to do the ones that are the most popular.
Yeah.
So whatever. A club owner once told me because I wasn't doing. He goes, "Dude, you got to play the hits." I'm like, "What are you talking about? Mm. Do the lines. Do this." Yeah. He's right. Because I mean, if I don't do it, people would be Don't you think?
That's what John Witherspoon would do. He'd just come out and do Friday quotes, and just they'd go crazy.
There is there's a comic, a very popular movie, very popular character, and he was ending his show with this character. Not that, but just the way he ended his show was very it just very much reminded me of that character, and I was like, man. And it's the only time I've really suggested. I was like, if you switched that ending bit to an impression of that popular character, the crowd would go absolute ape shit. You're already doing the joke.
Right.
All you have to do is the voice, and they would lose their goddamn mind. And you're already ending with it anyways. Mm-hmm. And he was very receptive to that. So
he did it.
He was very. I'll find out because it comes back in a couple months. Okay. I'm not trying to mention Pete, you know.
Is that a plug to go to your website to see the upcoming shows? Because that's where you would slide that in if I were you.
At the Comedy Club, KC.com.
Mm-hmm. But who named it?
The Comedy Club?
Yeah.
Google loves our name. It also has a little history.
Oh, is that what it was? You looked. See, you were doing AI, early AI without thinking about it. So you just pushed in.
No, what's the best but way? Now, no, it was just my. I mean, I understand Google, I understand keywords.
That's what it was?
Anybody who Googles Comedy Club Kansas City is just.
God. Oh.
So that's what it was.
Top of the list within 2 months.
That tracks. Next week, we're at the Summit Comedy Club, which no one would know where that was by the
way. But you have to, you have to file your name with the state.
Uh-huh.
And so when I did that, I was looking to see, jokingly, I typed in the Comedy Club of Kansas City and to see if it was taken. And the first thing I saw was the Comedy Club of Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm like,
that was taken?
I'm like, what is this? But it expired. You'll dig this in 1950. So it was like
1950.
I'm older, Sierra.
No, but just the history of comedy. So the Comedy Club in Kansas City, Missouri, was actually they they would put on comedy operas and playlets in the top theaters in Kansas City. And this was, and they did it through like the 1920s and 30s and stuff. And they had to be a club to sell liquor at their shows. So the name, the Comedy Club of Kansas City, actually goes back to the roots of live comedy and performance in Kansas City, even though it is the Comedy Club.
What was the one that was
that tracks
lived that was in Kansas City, Missouri? Was it Stanford and Sons?
For years, yeah.
That was Stanford's, right?
Yeah.
And that, boy, that has a rich history. Is there a book about that place?
Not about the place.
There could be a book or a movie about that place.
Well,
from what I've heard,
he tried to write a podcast about it.
He did.
We did one last week. I brought in two comics. They happened to be working last week. And they, one of them was the last comic to work this one of their rooms, and the other one was the last comic to work for him, period.
Huh.
And so we brought them both in to talk a little bit about the stories and a little bit about, but yes, they were they were interesting.
How many went to jail?
Probably all of them. One of them.
The owners and the father and the son, or something? The third one
for a long time. There was a brother that really was kind of, but then, I don't know, they didn't spend... I started comedy in 2000.
You started all of comedy?
I started all of comedy. Politics.
You started doing comedy.
I started doing comedy in around 2000. And I don't know that Craig or Jeff went to jail in my time, but whatever their history before that, you know, was their history. But they were definitely like... In selling drugs and doing drugs and stuff like that.
The rumor I'd heard was, do you want to be paid in coke or money? Coke or cash?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I hear that from a lot. That was the joke in that place? Yeah, and I'll take cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like giving you three checks and say, could you cash this one?
Two are out of state, post-dated. Oh. Yeah.
It's like banks don't care about post-dating now.
So. Yeah. Oh, well. I guess we know how we're getting paid tonight.
You know what? So what was your guys' first clubs? Like, where was your home club getting started? Where
were you? Wiseacres Comedy Club in McLean, Virginia, near Tyson's Corner Mall, if you're familiar with that. It was in a hotel, and they had an open mic on Wednesday night, and then they had Friday and Saturday shows. And the booker manager was this guy, Mike Diesel, who would always claim to have opened for, I was with Kinison one time, and all these stories, and me and Ray Romano at this party. And you know, you're young, you're like, oh wow, this guy's he's freaking big deal. And then as you get a little older, you realize, oh, maybe not that big of a deal. But yeah, that was the open mic I would go to every Wednesday. I drive an hour, and then I met people that were literally in the same boat that I was, same age, same kind of, you know, path. And then and a lot of people came out. Mike Birbiglia used to go there. Seton Smith. So you know, it's a lot of people came out of there. So Roy Scovel was in that area.
I love Roy.
Yeah,
Roy is one of
the, he's amazing.
One of the funniest people on the planet. Man.
I agree,
absolutely.
And watching him do like Jeremiah's improvised stand up shows, and watching him not just do comedy, but just go out and just do perform from nothing.
He's brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
We're going to our buddy's 50th birthday party in Vegas in November. So. We'll have some fun.
Sierra's given us the light, guys. She's told me we have about.
No, she's very busy.
I know. She holds up hands.
Okay. You like to do a half an hour?
Let's talk to
Joe for a second.
We can go a little bit longer if you want. But I was going to go help seat the room. But yeah. Joe,
listen. My first comedy club was East Side Comedy Club.
There you go.
Okay,
so the room, it's supposedly one of the first.
That's still there,
clubs,
right?
Clubs dedicated. No, they were there for a long time. They had the Magnificent Seven. Eddie Murphy was one of them. It was like one of the first dedicated comedy clubs in the country that just did comedy, like, and then they lost their lease, and they went to a bigger place, and they couldn't sustain it, but it was storied for a while.
Yeah.
David's, you can tell, guys, he's begging to do more time on the podcast. He's like, go That's longer. Okay. And I'm like, no, David. No, David Keckner. We cannot go longer.
You just got to go see people.
We're going to go.
You have a job.
We got a lot of people coming to see you tonight.
Check out, if you want to hear a great story with Dave and I, and Dave is the hero in this story, check out my podcast, The DLP Agenda, stands for Die Laughing Productions. We were in Hawaii at the end of March, and I did allow the wrong person in my room, and she did rob me of my phone and wallet. And then Dave and I tracked her down to literally a sting operation.
It was a sting operation.
The police were no help.
But we didn't.
We did it ourselves. We did end up catching her. We'll see how that ends. But Are You About That Life is the name of the episode. It's back late March, so check it out. It's an incredible story, I promise you.
Guys, go see David and Rob wherever you can in the country. They're two touring all the time. Thank you guys so much for coming
out.
Thank you for
the weekend.
Thank
you, Dustin.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.